Welcome, everyone, to this month's call, and I'm so happy to have my good friend Greg Slabor with us tonight. Greg is the president and founder of Westwood International. He has over 25 years of experience in executive leadership development and education, and has served as a coach, consultant, and facilitator for organizations including Fortune 500 companies, foreign governments, and entrepreneurial startups. His clients include Johnson & Johnson, United Airlines, Singapore Police Force, Boston College, Volvo, and many others. Greg is a member of the Kyle Wilson Inner Circle and has been in four of the book projects, and we're going to talk about a few of those tonight. And, you know, the thing is, every time Greg makes a trip from his home in Vermont to Philly or Dallas or L.A. for Inner Circle, I always have him share and train with the group. He's that prolific and that good, brings that much value. So I'm excited to have you tonight, Greg. Welcome, my friend.
Yeah, great to be here, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, how this call got, what got us on track to do this was we were talking TEDx talks, and that you actually have helped many people get those. So we'll come back to that later in the conversation tonight. We're going to have plenty of time for Q&A. But I do want to go back in time a little bit, and you have such an interesting background. You know, you're in corporate leadership training and work with companies all over the world, but I know in one of your stories you talked about you actually started out in education. So tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got to where you're at now.
Yeah, so, you know, I went to college. I wanted to be a doctor, so I started in biology, and then halfway through my college career, I realized I'd rather work with the mind and the spirit than the body. So I stayed with biology, but didn't go to medical school because it just wasn't a calling for me at that point. A local high school needed a biology teacher, and so they asked me if I would teach, and so I did. And that's how I got into education. And then 4 years into teaching science and coaching football and doing a bunch of other things at the high school, I still wanted to go to graduate school, but I didn't have a career path per se. And for me, the most important thing was my spirituality. And so I looked at different programs that I could study spirituality. And I looked at University of San Francisco, Seattle, Boston College, some schools in Chicago, and then ended up going to Boston College and got my master's in spirituality and pastoral ministry, and then spent 7 years at the university working for them as well. So that's, you know, I kind of got, just kind of stumbled through the education, so to speak, just kind of pulled the thread. And I have to say that job at Boston College is one of the best jobs I've ever had. It was a wonderful experience.
Wow. So have you found in working with companies on leadership, team building, being able to weave in, you know, a bit of the spirituality part is a little bit of your Trojan horse, if you will?
Yeah, so, I mean, I consider Inner Circle family. So I'll talk as if we're family versus in a corporate
Please.
Setting. In a
Please.
Corporate setting, I'll never, you know, bring up spirituality per se. Because in my experience, in order to be, you know, fully present, it's important to listen, to care, to love, to look for the larger picture, to contribute, to serve. I mean, that, to me, in essence, is a lot of spirituality. It's a lot of, and we could look at a lot of different faiths, you know, Christianity being, you know, the last shall be first, etc. But in a lot of faiths, that is the practice, getting over the ego and learning to serve and being a part of the bigger picture. Well, ironically, that's also what business and entrepreneurs and others are looking to do more and more of. And it's fascinating because I'm training now a group of college students on leadership practices. We just kicked off recently, and there's 17 people in the group, and we're doing it online. Every single one of them, all of them don't want to work for the quote-unquote man. They all talked about wanting to have an impact, wanting to make a difference, I think this next generation coming in is the most inclusive generation we've ever had. And to me, being inclusive, being present, taking care of the planet, all of those are spiritual ideals. And they're all important for businesses now. So with research catching up and with this next generation coming in, I can almost do spiritual work without even using the word. And so, yes, I bring up spiritual practices and values all the time, but I won't necessarily talk about it. Unless I've been working with the group for a while, then I'll start to talk about what does it mean to love one another? What does it mean to really care for each other? What will that look like in the way we listen, the way we ask questions, the way we make decisions? You know, I'll get to that point if I've built a rapport with the group, but in a lot of times, I don't even need to get to that point in order to begin to share spiritual, quote-unquote, values. I don't know if that, does that make sense? Is that?
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And have you found, as you just authentically are being yourself, that obviously you're attracting companies that are open to that, and of course, maybe even repelling companies that aren't, right? In other words, I'm sure you're staying true to yourself. And so has that helped you build up where most of your clients are pretty receptive to the philosophy that you're approaching the marketplace with?
Yes, and it's kind of funny. I had an early client, that's a while back now, was working with them. They were a national client. They had sites all over the U.S. and in Canada. And they had a lot of Wall Street clients who were using their services. And the CEO said, look, your services, what you're teaching really needs to be brought to Wall Street. And so we literally set up 2 days of meetings to meet heads of Wall Street firms. And I'll never forget the first meeting we walked in. And the guy said, all right, tell me what you do. And I told him. And within 3 or 4 minutes, he says, we don't care about that. You know, people make it, they make it. They don't make it, they don't make it. It's sink or swim here. What people feel and care about each other doesn't really matter. So meeting's over. Have a good day. Thanks for coming in. And that happened like 2 or 3 meetings in a row. And I turned to the CEO. I said, you know, I don't think this is the environment for this kind of work. And so we chuckled, and I mean, we kept the rest of the meetings, but we found that for almost 2 straight days. And so you're right. There are some environments that are really just driven by the numbers, transactions, and quotas. And if that's the case, this is really not the work for them. Now, on the other side, there's everything from dental offices to small practices where they say, look, Greg, we want to bring you in because we want to communicate better, listen more, be able to get more out of our own intuition, and develop fantastic rapport with our clients or customers. And this is not only for us as a business, but we want to grow as people. Well, if they have that spirit or philosophy, then it works really well. Because it's a mix of, you know, how to give better presentations, how to make decisions, business and team tools, along with a lot of things that Jim and others have talked about in the personal development world. And so that's, I mean, you're right. I repel or push away clients who don't really fit that philosophy, and small to large clients, you know, who want that, do. So it's been a great experience so far, and it's interesting to see that dynamic take place.
I love it. So with that in mind, when you're working with these big and small companies, you know, and many are in the U.S., you do travel abroad as well. It's a twofold question. Have you seen what you're being asked to do? Has that changed a lot the last 10, 15 years? Or is it pretty principle-based where it's the same type of stuff? And the second part of the question, or however you want to answer it, what are the biggest challenges you're finding And you can answer either from the company perspective or from the employee's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so things have been shifting. And they've shifted in two ways, which are almost counter forces. One, companies are starting to tighten their budgets, and they're putting more pressure on managers and leaders and employees to get more done with less money, less resources, being leaner. And there's been more emphasis and push, especially from the research, in terms of the importance of emotional intelligence, mindfulness, health, reflection, etc. And so putting together leadership programs or experiences for teams or people that require them to take time away from quote-unquote work to improve themselves, everyone gets it intuitively, and they know it's going to pay off in the long term, but it's difficult for some companies or leaders to see it in the short term. So there's almost counter tension forces working in that regard, but it's becoming more and more prevalent. The second force that's happening is this millennial and then the next generation after that, Generation Z, a lot of these folks are leaving companies more quickly if they don't feel quote-unquote called to it, or if they don't have a cause, or if there's not something that's making a difference or an impact in the world. I mean, even on the call I just had with this group of 17, one guy was working and he said, I think I'm going to leave the company because I really don't see how what they're doing is making a difference in the world. And I hear that a lot. And I think this generation is going to change things. I think the research is going to change people's understanding of the importance of mindfulness and emotional intelligence. And it'll be interesting to see how it sorts itself out in the workplace on how people are able to balance the self-care, which leads to more productivity, versus the challenge of the workplace, which is calling for less resources and more time. Does that answer your question, Kyle?
Yeah, it did. That's phenomenal. And, you know, I have a friend who was doing a book about health cost and that is the biggest expense in our country. You know, when we look the next 5, 10, 20 years, it's the biggest expense for companies. Do you think they're connecting the dots when you talk about mindfulness, emotional intelligence, that they're connecting the dots between those things that can help you, right, and the actual challenge with health costs for employees and sick days and things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, people are making a lot of connections there, and it happens in two ways. One is the health care. I mean, just for my company alone, our health care costs are going to go up 18% next year, way above the average for cost of living. Second, the other place it gets difficult and costly for companies is turnover. Depending on what research you look at, most positions require 2 to 3 times the salary to find a replacement. And the higher you go up in the organization, the more expensive it is. That's also a big cost. Third, disengagement. I mean, the Gallup research goes anywhere from 60 to 75% saying that people are disengaged. Now, the irony is if you look at kind of the Q12, which is one of the tools that Gallup uses to gauge engagement, to measure engagement, one of those questions on there is, do you have a best friend at work? Matter of fact, if you look at all 12 questions, I would say 11 of the 12 questions are all people issues. Has someone asked me if I've been doing good work? Has someone cared about me? Do I have a best friend? Do I have the resources I need to do a good job? You know, et cetera. And in all of that, the people side of the equation is becoming more and more important. And I think it's going to be even more important as this next generation comes in, because a third of the incoming generation, a third of people in college, not quite a third, 30%, self-report they do not have a best friend. And all the research says that when you go to a place to work, if you don't have someone who's a friend on that team or becomes a friend, you're disengaged for the most part, and you're likely to leave. Which puts a lot of pressure on teams and groups in order to create an environment where you can't make people be friends, but at the very least encourages friendship or is friend-like. And that's not so easy to do sometimes. But we're being pushed to do that, one, because this generation is asking for it, but two, it's part of what engagement, what requires people to be engaged, and three, people aren't engaged even with their best friends in their social life in this generation coming in. And so there's a lot of factors here that are coming into play that are really important, and I'm just fascinated to see how it all plays out.
You know, we didn't have any pre-scripted questions. You didn't know what I was going to ask you. I wasn't even sure some of the questions I was going to ask you, right? We're just going down this path. And it occurs to me, Greg, you know, I've known you for quite some time, and we're having a conversation we've never had before, right? We've never really talked about corporate environments. You come to the inner circle, we're talking more about practices that entrepreneurs can use, and we're about to jump into that. But just listening to mm-hmm. you, I think you're saying a lot of things you might not have said 10 years ago. So has this environment caused you to get better, you know, with the strains and challenges going on in corporate America and in the world and in the workplace? And for you to be relevant, you've had to continue to sharpen your saw, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's what's interesting is 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I stood out more than I do now, because in the last 15 years with mindfulness, meditation, emotional intelligence becoming more and more mainstream, a lot of people are able to hang out a shingle and say, I teach emotional intelligence or mindfulness or teaming or what have you. And there's a lot of people who are moving from, you know, a life coach into supposedly an industry or corporate coach, even though the environments are very different, or team coach, which, you know, the environments are very different. And so part of what I've had to do is to continue to evolve and grow and really, in some respects, build assets so that I can stand out and still, you know, be relevant in the marketplace to some extent. And I got to say, Kyle, you know, being a part of the books has helped a lot. And, you know, people always told me I should be writing, but I was so busy designing and leading and speaking, I never got to the writing. And so getting involved with you and doing the chapters in the books have been really helpful, even to the point now where I've just talked to an author or a writer recently to help me write a book, you know, potentially in 2020. And, you know, based on your advice, I've never had a list to speak to. You know, I've just kept in touch with my buyers or my clients and have continued to serve people. But I've never thought about building a list, collecting names, collecting emails, all of that. And you've helped me significantly with that. And, you know, just in the last 3 to 6 months, you know, from doing the chapters in the books and starting to follow some of your practices, I can now see how 2020 is going to be a better year for me just picking up some of those tips from you and doing some different things.
Fantastic. And I salute you for, you know, being open to those things, right? We do come from a little bit of different worlds, right? Yours is more the corporate world. Mine's the entrepreneurial world. We both can mm-hmm. swim in both worlds, right? But I really appreciate your openness of looking at some of the tactics, right, that have worked for us. So when mm-hmm. I have you at the inner circles, you know, we will typically, I'll say, hey, what do you want to share on? And you'll give me some different topics. And oftentimes we gravitate to helping people overcome, maybe it's stress, maybe they're going through a very, very difficult time. You know, people are going through financial challenges, divorces, they're going through their kids having issues, right? There's so much real stuff, and we do get very authentic, right, at the inner circles. And so mm-hmm. you have a whole tool chest that you have provided us at different times. I know we don't have a lot of time mm-hmm. to delve into that, But what can you share with everyone on the call that would be some, if they're going through a difficult time or they know someone else going through a difficult time, what's some of your sage advice and potential tactics they can use?
Yeah, okay, I'll give you two or three. You know, think of something that's difficult for you right now. A challenge you have, something surprised you, maybe it's a relationship or a pain in your life that you really wish would go away. And now think about any kind of challenge or issue or pain you've had 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. How has that pain from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago helped you and been a teacher for you and or have given you strength that you wouldn't have had without it? How has it played a positive role in your life now that it's over? Now look at what you're facing right now. What are two or three ways that what you're facing right now could end up helping you be stronger, smarter, wiser, or push you to something that you have never have found without it? Right, so you have your past experience to look at that tells you that some things that have happened to you that are bad or difficult or you wouldn't want ended up being gifts. Right there, I've talked to people who now say, you know, certain things, awful things that have happened to them, they wouldn't trade for anything in the world now because it's brought them to this point, which has given them a new joy, a new outlook, a new gift, pushed them to move it to a city or meet someone new that they would have never met or had or been before. So now look at what you have right now and write down 2 to 5 different ways that this pain or challenge could help you or give you a gift to provide you something that you would never have received had it not shown up. And begin to consider that. Begin to consider that possibility. Begin to look for those opportunities. Begin to kind of peek around the corners to see what could be ahead because of this in your life that could be a positive for you. And then my second question would be, and then how do you nurture that? How do you plant and nurture that possibility? All right? So that would be one tool I would share. Second, if you get to a point where you're really feeling burned out or stressed or difficult or anxious or angry or resentful, it's usually because you're either caught in the past or in the present or in the future. So if we just take a look at our emotions for a moment, if I'm angry or I'm resentful, or I'm upset, it's generally because something's happened that I didn't want. And that's the past. If I'm afraid, if I'm anxious, if I'm nervous, it's probably because I'm thinking about something in the future that hasn't happened yet. If I'm afraid of what might take place. And you'll find that most of your burnout and most of your challenges are because you're either caught in the past or ahead in the future. So one thing I do if I find myself in one of those two states is I get sensory. S-E-N-S-O-R-Y. I'll start just to see what I'm seeing or hear what I'm hearing or feel what I'm feeling, like my feet on the ground or the wind on my skin or the color of people's eyes or the clouds in the sky or whatever it might be. Get sensory. Just pay attention to what your senses are showing you. That will take you out of the past or out of the future. And the more you get sensory, the more you can regain your energy and be really just aware of what's taking place and make wiser and better decisions. Because the fact is, biologically speaking, the more emotional you get, the less you see, the less you're able to observe, the narrower your focus becomes, your field of vision. And it really diminishes your ability to make good decisions. So ironically, the less judgmental you are and the more you observe, the easier it becomes for you to make a wiser and better decision moving forward, and the more resourceful you'll become. So those would be two tips or ideas I would share with the group tonight, Kyle.
That's awesome. Oh, very, very powerful, Greg. So I know we do have some other topics I want to touch on, and I definitely want to leave time for Q&A. So I think when I sent the email out, I did mention five magic phrases to help you be more influential. You had thrown that out as a potential topic. So you want to share a little bit on that?
I'll share a few. So here are some phrases that I like to use that I think are magical. I've collected over the years. One is, you know, a lot of times if someone says something to me and I disagree, I'll say yes, but, or I'll say but, and it really can shut down the conversation or you get into a back and forth. Now, based on what I've said earlier, my philosophy is the goal is to collect as much information as possible. So if someone says something you disagree with, why fight it right away? Your goal is to collect as much information as possible because the person who has the information has the wisdom, has the power. So if someone says something that disagrees with me, I'll say, what brings you to that conclusion? What else? What tells you that? What information leads you to that conclusion? So the phrase would be, what else? What else? What else? And the more I ask that question and the more information I get, I really get to understand them. And it gives me more room or opportunity to influence them or direct the next steps if I have that information. So what else is a magic phrase. And I would replace it with but or yes, but. Another phrase that I find that if I'm in a situation where I'm trying to sell someone or get someone to do something or someone tells me no, another magic phrase is, great, you said no, you don't want to do it right now, I understand. But tell me, under what conditions would you consider this? So under what conditions is a great phrase. I think it's a great question. A third kind of magic phrase I use or consider if I'm meeting people for the first time. It's tricky sometimes to come up with the questions to keep the conversation going. But I picked this up recently on a podcast where a person noticed that a lot of interviewers would use this phrase to get people talking more. And the phrase was, I'm curious. It's a nice way to open something up without being judgmental and get people speaking. So, I'm curious. How'd you come to this party? Or I'm curious, how do you know the hosts? Or I'm curious, what do you like about the job? Great phrase to get people speaking and talking. Another phrase, I think that's three. So another phrase is if someone says, I don't know, or I'm not sure, one phrase I'll use a lot is take a guess. And I find it absolutely amazing. 8-9 times out of 10, someone will say, you know, I don't know what the answer is, or I don't know what we should do. And I'll say, okay, got it. But if you had to take a guess, what would your guess be? eight, nine times out of ten, they'll answer it. Like, it just comes up. It's amazing how effective that phrase is. And then I'll share the fifth phrase that I think is very powerful is if someone's talking, is just repeat the last two or three words of what they're saying, and they'll keep talking. So I was just, you know, I was just next door, and I was talking to a guy, and he was talking about he was doing yard work and how it was difficult. He says, so the yard work was really difficult. And I just said, oh, the yard work was really difficult. And he's like, yeah, I had to. And he went on to the, a whole other paragraph about the problem with the ladders and the lawnmower and all different kinds of things. So I think that was five. Those would be five phrases or kind of bits I would use in either conversations or discussions to help keep things going or to gather more information.
I love that. And back to the second one, I was taking notes, and I'm not sure if I got the phrasing just right. You say, in what situation would you, or in what scenario would you? What's the exact phrasing of that?
Yeah, under what conditions?
Under what conditions?
Would you consider? Yeah. So, okay, great. You know, so I do a lot of leadership development, leadership change or coaching. So if a company, if I'm talking to someone and they say, look, we're all set with our leadership development, I'm like, no problem. Under what conditions would you consider someone else?
Right.
Or under what conditions would you consider my company to come in and work with your team? Right? And then they'll give me the conditions, and then I'll know exactly what I need to do if there's a match. Right? So those are great phrases. Does that answer
Love
your question,
it.
Kyle?
It does. No, it's powerful, Greg. So I'm going to jump into the TED Talk conversation. Again, I have a lot more questions for you, but I want to open it up for other people to ask questions. And so talk to us a little bit about TED and how you help people facilitate getting a TED Talk or anything you want to share about that.
Yeah, so I'd be happy to. So I've been brought in for different TEDx events, et cetera, to coach TED speakers. And I was also, myself and some people from our company were asked to help them develop their new training program, which is mostly on a mobile device, 12-session program to train people to give a TED Talk. I wouldn't put myself forward as someone who helps others get TED Talks. But I have coached people to give good TED Talks and have trained other people to give TED-like talks in their companies or to their teams, et cetera. And so what's happened for us is after we helped TED develop and were part of the team that gave them feedback on their first two rounds, their alpha and the beta rounds of the process, we've now been certified to share this training with other people.
Very good. And so what are some of the steps you can take to develop and be considered for a TED Talk? Or what are some of the key elements
of
a TED Talk?
Yeah, the key element is, you know, it's ideas worth spreading. So what idea or concept or insight do you have that's unique or different or helps people just stop and pause and think like, oh, right? What is that one thing that you have that you can share? Right? So having that through line, which is one of the things that's taught in the program, having that through line and that point is critical. So it's not just giving a talk or sharing a story about your life. It's really having a talk that has an idea in it worth spreading. You know, then second, there's a whole bunch of, there's different pieces that go along with that. How do you set it up? What's the stories you want to tell? How do you get to that point well? What are the visuals you use? What's your presence on stage? How do you use your voice, your pacing, your tone? What are some examples of other great TED Talks that you can use to find your own style? You know, there's all those different elements that go into it. But part of it, and a lot of the training is helping you find what's your idea? What's your point? What's one thing you want to share with the world? And as you go through the exercises, a lot of it is helping you find that idea.
You know, Greg, I just an observation. You have such a relaxed style of sharing and giving presentations. And is that something that's always been with you? Is that something you've developed? And is that something you think helps someone when they give a TED Talk as well? Or is that get back to personalities?
I think it's a bit of both. I have found for me that being in conversation and interacting with the person or the crowd is more enjoyable and more fulfilling for me than trying to make a point. And I found when I first started speaking that the more I tried to make points or get something across, the less effective it was. And so for me, in my own style, I found it's better to be more conversational and use stories as often as possible. And that's just been what's evolved for me. But I've seen a lot of people who are, you know, much better. I mean, I went to a conference a couple of years ago, and I'd been asked to speak and work at this conference for 10, 15 years. I think I went 13 years in a row. And in year one or two, this very famous Harvard professor got up and gave this talk. And then he wasn't there for 8 or 9 years, and he was just there at one of the most recent presentations. And he had written 2 or 3 books, and I'd read both of his books and really enjoyed them. So I was looking forward to his next talk. He gave the exact same talk he gave 10 years ago.
Hmm.
I was like, dude, what? I mean, and I know he's been thinking about new things because he's written books. And so, you know, for him, his style was he had his one idea, his one talk, and that's what he did. For me, in my style, it's always evolving from phase to phase for me. Like, what am I learning now? What's going on now? How am I adding that? And, you know, people hear similar stories and thoughts from me, but there's always another nugget or something different that I'm working on. Because for me, I just see it as a journey. So that's part of where I'm coming from.
Love it. Well, hey, I'm going to open it up for Q&A, and we are using a new conference line. So the process is, I think once I do this, everyone's still going to be muted, but if you want to ask a question, you press *6. I'm pretty sure we're going to test it. And again, I don't mind silence, so, you know, there might be some, while you're thinking about the question you want to ask Greg, if there's a little bit of silence, I'm okay with that. And then, of course, I do have some questions I can ask. So, but I think it's going to be *6. We're going to test it. And, Greg, again, I'm hoping this doesn't mute you. I'll go and find you on the thing here and unmute you. But let's give it a shot here. Okay, sir. All right, so I'm pretty sure you hit *6, and if you have a question for Greg, and looking forward to hearing from you guys. And Greg, while they're thinking of some questions,
sure.
We already have some people that have raised their hand, but let me go ahead and ask this one real quick. So, the second book we did together was Resilience, Turning Your Setback into a Comeback, and you had that with your son Daniel, which was really a cool thing. And that was, again, a life event for you that had some challenges, and that has since just been an amazing thing that you've, you know, using some of the techniques you talk about, right? Communication and connecting and not reacting and getting the conversation going. What would you like to share about that?
Well, I don't know how much time we have here, but I think it's this. You know, so I'm divorced, and going through that divorce was not easy for the kids. And like any human situation, there's a lot of stories that are created. There's a lot of pain and difficulty that needs to be worked through. And, you know, it was a time in my life where I really had to practice listening, letting people have whatever story they had or perspective they have, even though I didn't agree with it, and being patient with it and loving and working it through when a lot of times answers weren't clear to me. I didn't know what the next step was. I didn't know what the right thing to do was. I didn't know how to fix or heal people. And sometimes it's just important to keep showing up. And so, you know, Daniel and I talked a bit about that experience, which I think is common for, unfortunately, for a lot of people, especially with family members or people we're close to.
Sure.
Where we come together and we separate, and that coming together and separating is not always easy or clean. And how do we reconcile that and continue to live our fullest lives beyond it? And so part of that chapter was around that story and around that challenge.
And that's been a bit of a bridge, right, that has continued. You guys, like Daniel's now been to a couple of inner circles, and he's been to a couple of events, and so it's been really cool. Okay, so we
really
do
good.
Have
I mean,
a question. Go ahead.
Yeah. Great. Go ahead.
Let's see here. Let me see if this works. Okay, go ahead and ask the question.
Hi, Ellen.
Yeah. Hey, Ellen.
Hi, Kyle. Greg, thank you very much for what you've shared tonight. My question is, what is the process to be considered for a TED Talk? Who you contact? What exactly is that process?
Yeah, so there are right now a lot of TEDx events, which are local events that TED has farmed out. And so what I would do is begin to Google TEDx and who is in charge and who owns the TEDx license in a particular area. And oftentimes they're looking for or open to speakers. Second, I would recommend finding your one point and putting together a little video or talk on that point. And they can be as short as 5, 7, 8 minutes. And having something to share with potential TEDx coordinators or directors. And then third, generally with the larger TED Talks, it's people who have been either in the media or have had a unique public or universal experience or book, and they usually go out and invite people to be a part of that versus people seeking them. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does, Greg. Thank you very much.
And Greg, Ellen's in New York City. You're up in Vermont. I mean, kind of neighbors,
yeah.
Right? So since she's in New York City, are you a little bit more familiar with maybe some of the different locations that these are available? Like, she has an amazing, amazing story, and it's in the Resilience book.
Thanks, Kyle.
It's incredible. And so would love to be able to hook her up with someone you may know in that area.
Yeah, so
New York City is a little bit
like
more familiar.
This is not my forte, because I've really not spent my time being a matchmaker in this regard. But I will say this: are we going to talk about the training at all, Kyle, and the TED Talk training? Do you want me to bring that up or mention that?
Yeah, of course.
So here's one option for people. And there are absolutely no guarantees whatsoever on this, and it's so I don't want to put any false hopes out there. But if you do go through, I have this TED training. If you want to go through it, you can go through it. And at the end, everyone has a chance to post. And there are times that TED people will go through and look at all the people who are posting videos from their TED training, and they can pick talks out to then be a part of their experience or be recommended for a TEDx or a TED Talk. So that is one option. Second, the office is in New York. You know, their headquarters are in New York, and Chris Anderson's there, who's in charge of TED. And they have a lot of things going on. I would recommend reaching out to them and asking them what their actual process is. That would be powerful, and or how you could be a resource for other TEDx events. You know, if TEDx, I'm assuming some directors would call the New York office from time to time and say, look, we're looking for one or two more speakers. Who do you recommend? You know, they may be able to do that as well.
Greg, I don't want to speak out of turn. Were you thinking about maybe hosting an event in the spring or next year in your neck of the
woods? Well, I mean, here's what we've done with clients and groups, because oftentimes we just offer the TED training to clients. You know, if we're training, say, 10, 15, or 20 people, we'll have them go through the TED Talk training so they learn how to give presentations. But if people are interested, Kyle, I could offer the TED training to people in the inner circle or in, you know, if you've been in the books or in your group. Now, generally, what we do on these is we have a start time, and we would kind of go through it together. Not that I would be coaching you through it, but if a group of people go through it together so that several people post their talks and we have a few, like, touch points in conversation, it could be really helpful. Second, you need to have a mobile device because it's designed to be done on either an iPhone or an Android or, you know, something like that. And if you have a partner who wants to go with it through you, they highly recommend that you do it with someone else because then the two of you can talk about your ideas and your concepts and you can get feedback right away. And if people were interested, I'd be happy to offer that to the group, you know, if people were interested.
Okay, so what's the best way for people to reach out to you to say, hey, Greg, let me know what I need to do next? Is that an email?
Let me give you an email, and it'd be my full name, all one word, Greg, Z as in zebra, L-E, V as in victory, O-R, at westwoodintl.com. So Greg's Lavore at westwoodinternational.com.
And I'll put that in the replay notes.
All right, that'd be great. And if people are interested, send me an email. I think we could start, say, November 6th, and we'll just take a group of us and we'll go through it together.
Okay, cool. I'll put that out in the email, and then anyone on this call or anyone listening to the call replay, reach out to Greg, and we'll just see what happens. But I hope you and Ellen also get to connect at some point in time. She's been wanting to come to the Philly Inner Circle, hasn't made it yet, but John, who was at the last Philly Inner Circle, was referred by Ellen, you know, John at Rutgers. And so, yeah, got to have you East Coast people connecting. Great group up there.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, Ellen, so much.
If anyone on the call has any additional questions or needs something, they can email me at that address. I'm happy to help out, or someone on my team can help them out. Happy to do that.
Awesome. Okay, thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Our next person, go ahead and introduce yourself and what's your questions for Greg?
I'm assuming this is for me, Kyle. This is,
it is
Billy Brown here in Nashville.
Hey, Billy.
Hey, thanks for putting this on, Greg. We met briefly, I think, in Pennsylvania, so it's good to be able to connect with you and ask you this question. I've been taking purist notes here, and I've only got one question. The one off the top here is very intriguing to me because you said that right off the bat you're trying to gather as much intelligence as possible from people you're talking to in order to make a sale, influence them, or all that. But at what point – or what tricks and trade secrets do you have to be able to guide that conversation so they just don't, you know, meander in the conversation and go off the reservation, so to speak? Obviously, you want to practice your patience and empathy, but at the same time, you don't want them wasting your time and being a therapist.
Right.
So is there any tricks there to be able to stop them mid-sentence and kind of get them back on to the topic you're more interested in?
Yeah, I'll give you two. One is the way you set up and frame the call. So a lot of times if I'm having a phone call with someone, whether it's an initial call or, you know, second or third call, I'll ask them, look, before we get started, what would you like to get out of the call? What would you like to walk away with? And so I can get clear about their goal for the session. And then I can state mine if I think it's appropriate. Right? The second thing, if it starts to go off the reservation, asking a question can often be more powerful than making a statement. So if, say, at the beginning, the question, they say, look, I just want to figure out who the best vendor is to help me with this issue, and I want to see if you're a match. I'd be like, great, thanks. I'd like to do the same. So let's get started. And then I would ask them, what would be most helpful for you to know? You want references? You want background? What would help you make a decision? And they'll tell me, and we'll go through it. Now, if we go south or it gets off track, I'll ask a question. And it can be really simple. Look, is this information helpful to you? Is this helping you make a better decision? Is there something I'm missing?
And Greg, yeah. How about if they're just going on, do you interrupt and do a pattern interrupt of some kind?
Yeah, you can. I mean, I'm not as familiar with the NLP techniques as others are, but you could definitely do a pattern interrupt or change things. Absolutely.
And is that kind of what you're referencing, Billy, or?
Yeah, because in my world, you get conversational, which is great because you're gathering intelligence to develop rapport and all that. But at the same time, you know, things get off topic. You know, sometimes it's my fault too because I get interested in something else and what we're talking about as far as a deeper connection point, but you need to steer it back. But if they go on and on and on, how do you politely interrupt them to get them kind of back to the conversation that you want to focus on?
You know, back to Greg's point.
So
I'd
ask a question.
Beginning.
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
Go ahead, Greg. Well, I was just going to say back to your point of how you frame the call. I always frame the call that I'm busy, right? And, you know, we got 30 minutes or whatever. And so if it's going off the rails, I have no problem interrupting because I'm there for them. Right? I'm there. It's their time. And if we've already clearly said this is about XYZ and we're talking about, you know, MNL, right? It's one of those things where I'm going to bring us back. And I will interrupt just because we've already, like you said, Greg, we framed the call and I'm letting them know I'm here for you based on this topic.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll often, kind of like what you're saying, Kyle, I'll often say, look, unfortunately, I only have, you know, 7 more minutes. What do we need to get done in order for us to make a good decision here?
Right.
Like, I'll interrupt and just use the time. And that time pressure can often be a leverage if you use it well. Does that cover your question? Okay.
Covers mine. That's
Billy?
Fantastic. Yeah,
awesome.
I take lots of notes there.
All right, great.
Good.
Fantastic. Billy, looking forward to seeing you in Dallas. That'll be great. And
yes,
so if anyone else has a question, hit *6. And so we're getting close to the top of the hour. Greg, so many questions here I didn't get a chance to ask you. Here's a couple real quick. Mm-hmm. So is meditation, I take it that's part of your daily practice, and does that look the same every day, or do you kind of, I know I'm kind of a free spirit, so I don't do anything the same every day. Do you have your specific rituals, or is it every day's a little bit different?
Yeah, I try to do 45 minutes every morning, and it's pretty much the same for me every morning. I do try to attend 1 to 3 silent retreats a year. And depending on what the teachings are or what I pick up and learn during those experiences, I may adjust my practice. I'm now trying to bring my meditation and thoughts more and more into my daily life. So if I'm just walking to get a coffee or if I'm just before I'm picking up a phone or just before I start a car, I'll try to find little moments where I can just bring myself back to be more present. So to answer that question quickly, yes, I do meditation. There is a ritual, but I'm always learning, looking to develop it.
Okay. And then you and your son actually went through a silent retreat this past summer, right? So was
correct.
How long was that?
It was a 7-day event. Yeah. We did a 7-day event in May, and we did a 4-day event in August. We did two this just past summer.
Yeah. How was the – I don't know if we've connected about the second one since you've gone through it. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, they're both – I will say for anyone who's considering it, there's a lot of different variations, all different kinds of varieties and methods. There is just not one way of doing it. I was very frightened the first time I went on a 4-day. I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to make this. It was a lot easier than I thought. And I was surprised. I mean, I'm an extrovert. I'm a talker. I'm social. And even I got a lot out of it. So for those of you who are considering it, you know, investigate, look online, check out the different traditions. I'm happy to talk to any of you if you want to talk more about it. I've seemed to found one that works well for me. To me at least, it was more frightening than it was in reality.
Love it. So, hey, I'm going to unmute everyone real quick.
Kyle, one other thing I'll say is I'm hoping to be in the LA meeting on November 8th.
Yes.
So if anyone's there has any more questions, they're welcome to grab me. I'll be there for the first half of the day in L.A. I won't be able to stay for the full afternoon, but I'll be there for the first half of the day if anyone has more questions and is going to be attending that event.
Fantastic. And, Greg, you gave your email, Westwood INTL.
Westwoodintl.com, yeah. And that's my email just for this. That's not the email that I respond to personally all the time. This is my email to catch this collection, to have me and my team work on who's going to do the TED Talk.
And you're on Facebook, right?
On
social media these days. You've upped your game a little bit on that. And what's your website if people want to go to your website?
A little bit.
What's the best website for people to find you?
Yeah, so the best is just to find me on LinkedIn. That's where I seem to be most active and most consistent. So LinkedIn at Greg's Lavore, you know, the same name would be great. That's the best place to find me. And or send an email. My regular email is just my first initial last name at westwoodintl.com. That's if you want to send me a message, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now. The Greg's Lavore is for collecting these names for the TED Talks. So those would be the two places to reach me.
Hey, awesome job tonight. Thanks so much for being so generous with all the information. Everyone, if you could give Greg a big thank you, and thank you guys all for being here tonight, and we will be talking to you
soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Kyle.
Good night,
guys.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Everyone.
Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks, Greg. Bye.